The date is August 12th, 1988, and we're watching Young Guns. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Doc Scurlock to my William H. Bonney.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, I mean, we've been releasing mini-sodes and everything like this, but we are celebrating our 75th official episode. Now, as you probably know, the 75th anniversary is traditionally the Diamond anniversary, so why not celebrate with a Lou Diamond Phillips movie? Well, for this, we figured why not bring back a history lover that's been on our show before, who has already admitted to us before that the American Old West, it just really isn't his specialty. So on that note, the dirty Steve Stevens to our Doc and Billy. My son, Chris Wells. Chris, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. And I will say, upon watching this movie, I do have a lot more knowledge of the Wild West than I thought I did.
Okay. Yeah, well, so right on.
A lot of it stayed in there. And I just didn't, I had no recollection of it.
Yeah, right on. So this week, we are looking back at August 1988, when the movies in theaters were The Blob, Clean and Sober, Mac and Me, Tucker, A Man and His Dream, and, of course, our movie for today, Young Guns, which earned $56 million on an $11 million budget.
No wonder it doesn't seem like the most competitive competitive field of movies to go up against.
Yeah, well, that juggernaut of Mac and Me, you can't forget that. I mean,
yeah, Paul Rudd clearly can't.
Was this like a January release or something? Huh? Was this like a January release where they just dump all their shit
movies? No, we're looking at August. August is also one of those ones that in the past has been a dumping ground. So,
really? Yeah. I would have expected that to be like a drop your end of summer blockbuster.
No, it's in the past it's been a dumping ground. Sorry, Colin, we cut you off.
No worries. But as always, this movie is 1988. I'm 80, so it's 34 years old. Yeah. So
that's older than me.
There's gonna be spoilers ahead, so if you haven't seen the movie, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I have three this week. The first is, the odds were 100 to 1.
Sure.
Show me the math.
Doc specifically tells Billy the odds are 100 to 5. So, I mean, they have a line that completely contradicts this tagline.
That's true. There are more than one of them.
Yeah. Number two, don't count the odds, count the bodies.
That's a good one. I like that.
I think they do that throughout the film, yeah.
Yeah. But it even feels more like count the holes in the bodies. I mean, you know, it's not just the bodies added up. It's the amount of colander-ing that is happening to some of the people in this movie. I just made a verb out of a colander. That's right. Colander-ing. A lot of squibs going off in this movie, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So much fucking smoke. Oh, my God.
Well, finally, let's bring it home strong. This is the one that I've seen in the most places anyway. 6 Reasons Why the West Was Wild.
Why just 6? Oh, okay. Right.
Yeehaw! Yeah, that one. That one gets my cowboy hackles up. You know, I'm now all excited. Hackles are a bad thing, I think. But no, now I'm all excited. I feel like I want to go hop on a bucking bronco now, because we're now talking about the Wild West.
Yeehaw.
It's kind of surprising, and I never really noticed it until this watch, because, to be honest, last time I watched this movie, I was probably, I don't know, 12 or younger. Mm-hmm. And I'd never, like, I know in Young Guns 2, his big line is, I'll make you famous. I remember that all the time.
Yeah, yoo-hoo, I'll make you famous.
I did not remember the Reap the Whirlwind, that being such a big thing in this movie. And I'm shocked that wasn't a tagline or consideration.
Yeah. Well, let's not worry about the taglines anymore, because we need to find out more about this movie. Let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
Okay. While on a trip into town, Lincoln County rancher John Tunstall saves a downtrodden boy named William from a trip to the gallows and recruits him to work on his ranch. At Tunstall's house of wayward boys, he attempts to instill the values of successful and upright gentlemanliness into his ragtag group of regulators, Doc Scurlock, Jose Chavez, Richard Brewer, Dirty Steve, and Charlie Bowdry, while repeatedly clashing with another local businessman named Lawrence Murphy, who wants to see Tunstall and his ranch gone for good. After a New Year's dance, that was an assumption just because they say Auld Lang Syne. I'm not sure makes sense. After a New Year's dance, Murphy's men execute a successful plan to murder John, leaving his band of strays without their mentor. After being deputized and charged with executing warrants to bring Murphy's men to justice, things quickly go south when trigger-happy William decides justice is best served cold and Billy the Kid is born. Now, with the law no longer on their side, Billy and his pals must outrun Murphy's men, the military, local police, and a slew of bounty hunters in order to exact their revenge. Who will reap the whirlwind? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
I think it's a crazy assumption of you to make that it's New Year's. Auld Lang Syne is personally one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. I'm bumping that on my stereo all the time.
What a banger.
Yeah.
Got the top down, windows down, cruising. Yeah. Auld Lang Syne.
The trap remix.
Trap remix. Not even. Classical version. Trap remix only when, you know, when you got that feel.
Yeah. DJ Khaled saying, like, you know, another one. Got more Auld Lang Syne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever that means.
So, Young Guns is a movie that I thought I loved. I mean, we've discussed this before with past movies. I'm not much of a Western guy. I know this is the one where it's like, this is the one that got me interested in checking out some Westerns, but I discovered with myself when it comes to things like John Wayne and that era of Westerns, the spaghetti Western era, I'm not a fan. I don't like a lot of Westerns, but, you know, give me a Tombstone or an Unforgiven any day, right? And I would have lumped this in with Tombstone and Unforgiven.
I don't really like where this conversation is going.
After watching it, I realize it's the sequel I love, because I don't know how I feel about this watch of this movie. It's one that I definitely don't remember very well. I know parts of it, but I definitely don't know it very well. Chris, as the person on this show that was born after this movie came out,
that's me.
What would you say is your past experience with Young Guns?
I've never seen. I saw this film 22 minutes ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Finished. The more operative term would be I finished this film 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, I ran
for the first time.
I ran down to his room and invited him, and I said that his girlfriend could join us on the podcast as well if she wanted to. But I went down there and I was going to talk to him about, okay, we're recording in 15 minutes. And I can see on his screen, he's watching Young Guns, and I go, well, okay, never mind, I won't interrupt. He's like, I got 5 minutes left, I'm almost there.
I just totally spaced on the fact that this was happening. You told me a while ago, and then you mentioned it at the beginning of the week, and I went, right, and just completely spaced.
Okay,
here
so you have approximately a 3-hour history on Young Guns, fantastic. Colin, what about you? What's your history with Young Guns?
This is like Young Guns and Young Guns 2 are like childhood movies for me. They're again movies that my mom loved, so they were, when we didn't have TV, these were on our rotation. And so yeah. I've seen them quite a bit when I was younger, and like, I don't know, they always really resonated for me because I grew up on a farm. My family is very, very country, and like back in the day, very, very into like rodeo and like cowboys and all that stuff. So like,
did you have horses where you lived?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
when
you
grew
up, like, okay, when you say farm, like you had livestock roaming around.
Yeah, like when I was when I was really, really young and we lived on my grandparents' farm, we had like chickens and cattle and horses and pigs, like everything. It was cool.
Yeah, Sydney's grandparents have a similar thing. Yeah, cows, chickens, and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris's sister.
Nice.
Just for anyone that actually cared with that out of context comment that only I would understand.
It's all good. But yeah, so like cowboys. Like if you look at any pictures of me from before the age of 7, there's a good chance I'm wearing a cowboy hat and cowboy boots and all that shit. So like, so
Burton like, boy,
did you have a belt buckle?
I had belt buckles, and the thing about
had multiple. You better have
The thing about belt buckles was like, again, we're into rodeo, and it's like if you win the rodeo, like the belt buckle is your reward. And I remember like wanting so badly to grow up and win a belt buckle, but I topped out at mutton busting, riding sheep when I was 5 years old.
And you had to tie them?
No, we had to. You rode them like bull riding. So it's like
a bucky rock.
Basically, you just grab onto them and hold on for dear life.
Okay, right on.
How many Calgary Stampede bolo ties do you own?
That's the thing. I've never been to the Calgary Stampede. I've been to the High Prairie. Really? I've been to the High Prairie Stampede numerous times.
Okay. But back to Young Guns.
So like, this movie just because it's cowboy related was just always really fascinating to me, and it's just a fun movie. But like you, Sean, I think I enjoy. I have more memories and more recollection of the second one than the first. Yep. I remember the last scene, like the final fight, so to say, of the first one really well. But like the second one is, I think I had watched the second one first.
Slater, give me Alan Rock,
which is hilarious because
William Peterson as Pat Garrett.
I only knew there were sequels because Young Guns 3 was recommended to me afterwards.
There's a Young Guns 3?
Apparently, or at least it's, whatever I don't was think... underneath Young Guns looked like a 3.
I think there's only a 2. I know they're talking about making a 3, but there isn't a 3 out yet. Okay. Yeah.
They'll just be guns.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just guns. But when it comes to Young Guns, though, I like you. I'm not a big westerns guy either. Not at all, really, these days. But Young Guns, I would say Young Guns is my favorite western movie, and probably one of my favorite movies.
Hold on, Chris just flashed me something. It says that it's a TV program. Young Guns 3.
This is original title Young Guns 3, Alias Billy the Kid 2022. Wow. So maybe this is the new movie coming out.
Interesting. Or
TV series. They're gonna work in Boba Fett it. Well, anyway, let's jump into Young Guns, directed by Christopher Kane, who was a director on like Next Karate Kid and the Magnificent Seven series. So, you know, huge credits there. Produced by Christopher Kane and Joe Roth, and written by John Fusco, who was also the writer on the sequel, and like Hidalgo and The Babe and Marco Polo and Spirit, you know, which is the horses, the animated horses. He's into his western stuff and historical stuff as well, because like The Babe and Marco Polo. But so we open the movie with this really strange superimposed opening that's sepia toned sort of ?
I wanted to ask you guys, like, is this an 80s movie? Like, you know how nowadays there's like no opening credits to any TV show really. It's like it is kind of everything always just kind of starts now. But that like the vibe I got at the beginning of this movie was like, it was very TV show opening. Like, Here's your cast of characters. Yeah. Let's start the episode.
Yeah, this is the opening in Full House where Stephanie Tanner does something cute and does a thumbs up to the camera, because that's what each one of them gives us, is like this little smirk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until they get to Chavez, until they get to our man Lou Diamond Phillips, our 75th anniversary man. But he plays it all straight.
Yeah, the first thing I've written here is it's like a TV opener. Yeah, it seems like the opening to a TV show.
Yeah, you need like a boom chicka ooh.
Well, there is that throughout the movie, is the thing.
Well,
music is so jarring.
We have to get to the score, but I mean, like, it's just like, I don't know where to start. But let's look at the like the visuals first, because I brought those up first.
Yeah.
Where it's just, they chose some really weird times to use this sepia thing. Like, they used it for the death of John, but other places where you feel like they should have used it, if this was the artistic style that they were going for, this grainy weirdness, they didn't use it in certain places where they should have.
I wonder if it was just like bad camera work. maybe it was unintentional.
I've written here that the cinematography for the whole movie is just whack. Like, if it's not a static shot, it's just impossible to focus on, and it's just chaos.
Yeah.
Like, they just, like, they're constantly snap panning past people and moving up and down, and there's dust everywhere. It's just, if it's not just a straight shot of your actors, it's just chaos. It's impossible.
Yeah. Well, because the one time that I felt like they should be using this shot was the peyote trip.
Yeah.
And it's like they messed with audio, or unless like Kiefer Sutherland was actually doing the whole a butterfly thing, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't use it there, and so it's just I watch a movie like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, where
classic drug scenes.
Yeah, where they and they have scenes that are washed out like this, or movies like Natural Born Killers. Like, they do a lot of switching back and forth between two different styles. But this style is used at, like, 3 points in the movie and no others. So it's like, that's not the style you're going on. Like, pick a style. Like, what are you trying to shoot here?
Yeah.
And no interesting shots when you weren't using the weird, grainy camera either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very true. It's like, I didn't even really pick up on it, to be honest, but now that you mention it, I can see what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, just like the whole, like, especially in the start, it kind of got a little better towards the middle. And then the end, it was just, yeah, just the camera was like moving from left to right and up and down, and you couldn't focus on a thing. And then all of a sudden it would snap back to a tripod shot, and it would be like, oh my, what? What I said before we started recording to Dad was, the one thing I have to say about this movie is it's very jarring. Everything about this movie is jarring.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, the scene, I noticed, like, the scene cuts were very sharp and very, like, very abrupt. The one I think most of is even at the end, you know, when Billy comes back. I hate cycling back to the end right at the beginning of the show, but at the end when Billy comes back to shoot Murphy, I just realized a lot watching this movie that there were things that my brain, as a young child, like, totally washed out all the bad, like, all this bad cinematography that you're talking about. Because when I watched it, like, yesterday, I would watch it and I would constantly be in my mind, like, I thought there was more to that. Like, even when Dick gets shot, like, I thought there was way more build. I remember there being way more build up to that happening
rather than Let's Dance.
Well, not even that part. I'm talking when the guy's like in the outhouse. I remember it being more suspenseful, like him walking up slowly and it like panning there, panning back to him, panning there, and like
that shit.
If you would have asked me how that scene would have went, I would have told you that at one point Dick looks back at them and is like, "Guys, it's all right," and then he gets blown away.
It seems like that's what they
there
were
was. There's so many things like that where my mind having Mandela effect all over the place watching this movie.
Yeah. Okay, so Chris brought it up earlier, the music. So what I read about the music is that James Horner wrote the original script, but it was rejected for being, quote, too Irish. And so the director said he wanted a more traditional Western score. What the fuck happened?
Yeah, Western?
Why did we have, like, weird 80s action music going on? Like it was an episode of Miami Vice all of a sudden? Or I guess appropriately, like, Walker Texas Ranger or The Renegade or some shit?
Mia said the perfect thing while we were watching it, because
Mia is his girlfriend, in case anyone isn't caught up. Yeah, okay.
I couldn't put it to words, but she said it's like the background music of a Six Flags commercial.
What?
Which is exactly what it is.
Yeah, you see them going down the log ride and, you know, like eating cotton candy.
It's just so out of place. It's the weirdest possible score you could have chosen for a Western movie.
Yeah, and then, like, it ends the same way. Like, the closing music, the closing credits music, I think it's going to be something like fucking Bon Jovi, because that's what I'm used to, because that is Young Guns 2. And then with this one, it's just like, what is this? What? It's just this weird synth shit. I don't know. Were you taken out of it by the score, Colin? Like, did you take note of the score?
I didn't, to be honest. The score did it for me. I liked it. I love that, but I think it's kind of, to me, it's like, it's the aesthetic of the movie. Like, I think what makes this as a Western, why it appeals to me, is all this stuff. I like that it's set in the West, but it has all this alternative music and shit.
Dude, there's this one point in the movie that made me almost like spit out my drink, because it's just, they go, it's John Kenny, and then there's a snap cut from, they were in the town before, there's a snap cut to all four of them riding a horse through the desert, and it's just playing this 80s soft rock, and it's like, it's just so jarring. Like, you're in a town in one scene, and it goes, it's John Kenny, and you're all of a sudden in the middle of the desert riding with your friends, and there's playing like eight, oh, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's no other word for it. It's just crazy.
Well, I mean, I think the Western should still have, like, the slide guitar and harmonica and banjo and shit. Mm. I mean, you know, I wasn't getting behind the 80s synth, you know? It was a little much for me personally.
I like the attitude.
You're giving me kind of an idea of like the fact that you like a movie like A Knight's Tale.
Yeah, it doesn't execute it nearly as well as A Knight's Tale. I will say that.
Yeah,
I think that was kind of what I was thinking of as we were talking here. There was a word that describes it, but I like that you take kind of the current aesthetic and apply it to an old-timey situation.
Right.
Yeah, like a juxtaposition of blah, 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 blah. Yeah,
dichotomy.
All arty, yeah, the dichotomy of, I don't know, shifting the paradigm. Whatever.
Red herring. Sorry?
Red herring. More than ever before, I felt that the peyote scene in this movie was very out of place. It just seemed like an excuse to have a peyote scene because you have a Navajo or something. I don't know.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah.
And even when they're walking, when they think they're in the Shadow Realm or whatever, and they're walking through this, like, indigenous reservation.
I don't know what to say. You want to say it differently.
It just seemed. Yeah, I don't know. I remember never really understanding that part of the movie, but even as an adult, I didn't understand it this time.
Yeah. Funny thing is, in that scene, it was Kiefer Sutherland's face is covered up because that's not Kiefer Sutherland. His child was born that day, and so he left set. and they just brought in his body double for that scene. So that's why they covered up his face in that scene. Little fun fact for you.
That is quite fun.
Cue the More You Know jingle.
I have a... The fun fact that I found about this movie is that Tom Cruise is actually in this movie.
Yes.
As one of Murphy's men.
There are actually three cameos in that closing scene.
Yeah, oh, really?
Tom Cruise is one of them. The guy operating the Gatling gun is Randy Travis. I have to make sure that I did write it down. I have to make sure that I got that right. Yes, it's Randy Travis. And Emilio Estevez is also one of the bad guys in that scene because he wasn't shooting that day, and so they made him up, and he's just one of the guys in the back shooting.
You got him.
Yeah, so I thought that was funny, though, that Emilio Estevez is like a cameo shooting out at the old, what was his name again? Terry O'Quinn's Alex's house?
Alex, yeah.
Yeah, Alex, yeah.
Yeah, well, while we're on the topic of the cast, that's another aspect of this movie that's very jarring. It just kept taking me out of it. Just the, what was it? Oh, the guy who runs the house at the beginning is Chancellor Valorum from Phantom Menace. And well, Zod.
And Zod.
And Jor-El.
Yeah.
He gets to play Zod and Jor-El. Yeah. That's cool. Emilio Estevez, just the Breakfast Club guy is in this.
Yeah, well...
Guy from Lost,
Charlie,
Alex.
Yeah, Terry O'Quinn, yeah.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen is one that I have trouble with. Because, like, since seeing him in Hot Shots, I can't take him seriously in anything else, because all his performances are the same.
Yeah.
But in Hot Shots, he's doing it for laughs, or Two and a Half Men, right?
His 30-second performance in Ferris Bueller is the same.
Yeah, that's true.
I find Charlie Sheen difficult in this movie just because in real life, he's such a...
Yeah.
Like, turd and such an idiot. And it's weird to then see him in this movie playing the guy who's supposed to be the respectable, upstanding citizen.
Leader.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You want to play a little game here with the cast, since we're on the subject of cast?
Sure.
I just have to turn my screen away from Chris here. Okay. At one point, someone in the movie says, you know, not one of them over 21 when he's talking about the Revengers. Revengers?
Regulators.
Regulators,
yes.
Jeez, so many, like, multiple syllable R words to choose from. Okay, so someone says not one of them is over 21. Who do you think was the youngest?
Like, actor or character?
As the actor. Because, spoiler alert, all of them were over 21. But which one do you think was the closest to 21? Who was the youngest?
I'm going to say Bowdry.
So, Casey Shemeshko?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say Charlie Sheen or Emilio Estevez, but I have no fucking clue.
Okay. Kiefer Sutherland was only 22 years old when
actually,
he made this movie.
Now that you mention this, I was going to say Kiefer Sutherland looked really young in this movie. I was thinking that the whole time.
Yeah. The thespian Charles Sheen, Charles Sheen, was 23. Dermot was 25. Emilio and Lou Diamond Phillips were 26. And Casey Shemeshko was the oldest at 27 years old.
Dang. Got it completely wrong.
Yeah. But all of them over 21. But then I read some fascinating things. Like, I started looking at a few of the things that, like, about the actual history of the Regulators.
Yeah.
And apparently John was younger than everybody when he was gunned down.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like he was only 24 when he was killed, and like Doc at the time was 31. Like only Billy the Kid was actually like legitimately 20 years old when he was gunned down.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Cue another The More You Know jingle. Yeah.
That's
just a reminder to my future editing self, right? I gotta put it in there.
So I take it you guys weren't fans of Emilio Estevez's performance in this movie?
I had no problem. I enjoyed the, and this was actually something that he said in one of his interviews, and I agree with what he thought about the character, is that he was trying to approach it from a place of fun. This guy that was, you know, just having a good time, you know, like when he kills the guy in the outhouse where he's taking a leak and, you know, like he's just having fun with it, yeah. stuffing the warrant in his mouth and everything. So you could tell, though, that Emilio Estevez was having fun. If it was real life, I would be fucking gone. I wouldn't want anything to do with that asshole. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had no problem with Emilio Estevez, except when he was wearing that first hat. Once he got the bowler hat, I was okay with it. But, man, like, his hanging out in the pig pen hat that he was wearing, the weird, I don't know, chappy cap?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I've written here.
Fisherman's cap.
Emilio Estevez is great. I enjoyed his performance, and I'm glad that you went out and did the research, because I was going to say it was just really fun. So he fucking nailed it. Good for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's between this and Gordon Bombay in terms of, like, roles that I've seen him in. But, like, to me, this is, I would say this might be Emilio Estevez's best bit of acting. Like, he actually seems like a different character. Like, Gordon Bombay, I'm like, oh, you could just be, you're probably just that guy. Or even in, like, The Breakfast Club, it's like, he's a lot younger, but it's like, I don't really even buy him as that jock character. But I bought him as this, you know, kind of wild, crazy kid. And, I love that scene when he goes into the bar and that guy's there talking about how this is the gun that's going to kill Billy the Kid. And he's like,
that's a good scene.
I think I see him.
He wasn't lying.
So good.
I mean, this could have been a much different movie. Possible alternate casting for Billy the Kid was Sean Penn. Hmm. But he had to turn it down because he was going through some legal troubles at the time, which Sean Penn did do in the 80s. You know, he's a very charitable and upstanding man now, very cool guy now, but yeah, he went through his phase of crazy. And then the only other possible recasting that I found was for the character of Dick, which was Charlie Sheen. Patrick Swayze was an alternate casting, but he didn't want to do an ensemble movie. So he turned it down. So we almost didn't get the brothers. I mean, imagine a Sean Penn, Patrick Swayze, and everyone else movie. Like, that would have been a different movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought all the characters, I mean, in my opinion, they were more defined than I remember them being when I was younger. Like, when I was younger and I watched the movie, you pretty much just focus in on Billy. But in this one, I found myself paying a lot more attention to Doc and Charlie. Dirty Steve kind of never really gets his due, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, one thing I'll say about Dirty Steve is, like, Dermot Mulroney, I know him from, like, wasn't he in My Best Friend's Wedding? Or was it...
How is
it? One of those rom-coms, you know?
Yes.
He's in movies like that I know him best from, you know, The Ideal Husband and shit. But with this, it's like, okay, like, he kind of disappears into that role. Like, I was actually really impressed with Dermot Mulroney, almost above just about everyone else. And, I mean, Kiefer Sutherland was giving this weird, understated, shy performance, but once he became, like, confident Doc, I really liked Kiefer Sutherland as well.
Yeah, I loved Knife Guy and Tobacco Guy. They were excellent.
How much tobacco did he fucking...
Dude, we need to talk about this. The only comparison I can think of is, have you ever seen, like, Trailer Park Boys? How Julian is always holding a drink. He's just always got a softball size of fucking tobacco in his mouth. It's just ridiculous in every single scene. That guy either gave himself mouth cancer for the role, or he had to have been chewing on fucking something else, because it's just ridiculous.
Big League Chew.
Big League Chew.
I was going to say, they must have given him gum or beef jerky or something, because it's just, oh my God. God, the amount of tobacco this man eats during the film is crazy. It's crazy.
I always get Dermot Mulroney mixed up with Dylan McDermott I don't know which one is which, but
yeah, I know it when I see them. Like he's got the scar on his lip, right? But it's like, yeah, they're interchangeable. When it's like, which role did they do? Yeah, I mean, I might have ideal husband might be, Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney. I have no idea which.
Yeah, I agree. He definitely gets absorbed into the character. I was kind of just going along the lines of like, I don't feel like Dirty Steve gets a lot to do. I kind of wish he had more of a satisfying ending, even if he gets killed. But you never kind of get the resolution between him and Chavez, except he just sees him, Chavez bringing the horses, and then he gets shot down. He's not like Charlie, who gets to get blasted to bits, but finally gets to kill the guy he was afraid of the entire time. So,
yeah. Do you have a favorite death in the movie?
Favorite.
I'll tell you my least favorite. There is this one guy that gets stabbed in the neck and then grabs his neck in this really weird way where he's like, "Aw, aw, aw," and then falls over. Like it's possibly the worst bit of acting I've ever seen. And that was that guy is Cody Palance, the son of Jack Palance. And it's like, okay, so you got your kid in the movie, but clearly you got your kid in the movie. He did not audition for this role.
My favorite death was the main antagonist, the dude who owns the other shop or whatever.
Jack Palance.
Yeah, because he gets shot in the head and then just flips around to the camera and goes, and then just sinks to the floor. It's so good.
Yeah.
So good. Because he's just got the dot painted on his head.
Yeah.
Flips around to the camera. Oh, just so cheesy. So good.
Yeah, like, I think my favorite.
Slow-mo.
My favorite is, I think, Charlie Sheen's.
It's kind of just so abrupt and like...
Yeah, but I mean, like...
Bang!
He took a whole bunch.
Shit.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite... So, I liked McCloskey's a lot. I just like how that situation unfolds with Billy being like, I saw that. and then just, that's kind of when you know Billy, he's going to be a problem for Dick.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know whether the brains splattered all over Kiefer Sutherland's face were entirely necessary, though. that was a fun death, but surprising, and it's like, whoa, holy shit, they went there.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, speaking of unnecessary, I'll give an honorable mention to Alex's death at the hands of a Gatling gun. Like, that's excessive force if I've ever seen it.
Just couldn't. He just wouldn't sit down.
Yeah,
just
Randy boom, Travis boom, 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 just boom. Gunning him the fuck down.
It's like Willem Dafoe in Platoon.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must be in Young Guns, too. I remember that Chavez being, like, way more just involved and a lot more knife fighting. I almost feel like I need to watch Young Guns 2, except you seemingly can't find it anywhere to download.
or rent. There's this one part where that dude's gang first shows up to the farm or whatever.
Murphy?
Yeah, he shows up to the farm and they get into a little bit of a standoff really quick where they all pull their guns on each other, and Chavez chooses to put his gun to the side so he can point his knife very threateningly. He doesn't point his gun. He takes his rifle with the one hand and points it off to the right so that he can point his knife menacingly at the guy in front of him.
Yeah. That's...
As you do.
They know how good he is with a blade.
Chavez brings a knife to a gunfight.
He sure does.
He does not give a damn.
No. No, not one single one.
There's a few kind of throwaway lines that I also really loved, but the one that stands out to me the most and made me laugh every time I watched the movie this week was after Dick gets killed and they're all running away and scurrying away on their horses, you just hear Charlie say, "We can't leave him, he's our foreman."
Well, one notable line I wrote down was, "That's a Fargon lie, and you know it."
Yeah.
I don't know what Fargon is. Yeah.
It's also crazy, just to go back to when they, when Dick gets shot, that they just leave his horse tied up. That's so messed up. That horse probably had to, like, gnaw through that rope or whatever. Just...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well... Probably died in the middle of the desert. That sucks.
Yeah. I guess so.
A little more you know, I guess. Dick's horse died in the desert.
You don't get to call the...
I think
the
I just did.
You know jingle. No, that's
I
for
think I just
future
did.
Editing, Sean, to
in
take
fact,
care of.
Dad, if you want to throw another one in right now, more you know, thank you very much.
You could do it, you more you know, if you could tell me how long can a horse last without food or water?
47 days.
Really?
Sure.
Oh, here.
The more you know.
and can you teach a pig to bark at strangers?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Prove me wrong.
That was an interesting question.
If you can prove that or wrong, that... sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what Charlie Sheen says, is that someone taught someone to teach a pig to bark like...
Someone taught someone to teach a pig?
So someone taught their pig to bark
Where
at strangers.
Where can I go to get taught to teach a pig?
I don't know. Some sort of 4-H club school. But Charlie Sheen's accent was a little questionable. I'd say a lot of the accents in this movie are questionable. I actually wrote down, is Jack Palance doing an accent? Irish, maybe? I couldn't quite tell. I mean, is that why Terrence Stamp just decided to use his regular voice?
Yeah, that's the one that was throwing me off the most, is I was like, is this dude British? It's the Wild West. Why is this British guy here? Yeah. That one threw me off for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Murphy is meant to be Irish.
Yeah.
I'm just not educated, but I didn't realize until doing some of the research for this movie that this is all based on an actual historic event.
Yeah.
I've always assumed that Billy the Kid was kind of like a mythological character.
Well, to an extent, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of liberties taken from what I was reading. Like, in reality, there were like more like 11 regulators, not 6. You know, there one that I read is that Jack Palance was singing Irish Eyes Are Smiling, but that song came out like 30 years after this movie was set.
Nitpicking, if you ask me.
Yeah, so I mean, that's extra evidence that he's Irish, though.
Why do they call Asian people celestial? Was that a term back in the day? I didn't understand.
I think it's just because the East was considered like mystical and magical. There wasn't much known of, but then again, it's also, I've written here, it's 1878 when this story is set. That's kind of like turn of the century almost.
Yeah.
China isn't that mystical of a place anymore. Like, they're a world trading partner. Like, they're not doing magic or anything.
Wow.
I don't know. It's just weird. But also a funny thing I've written that my girlfriend said in the middle of the movie when...
Mia, for anyone that wasn't paying attention earlier.
Earlier. When the Asian actress shows up, she goes, were there Chinese in the Wild West?
Now, it should be noted that Chris's girlfriend is Asian, so...
Oh, well, that's what... But, yes, for those listeners out there, there were Chinese in the Wild West. In fact, they were the majority workforce on the railroads.
Yes.
They built most of the railroads until...
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah, we learned that in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. But 1878 is when the movie is set, and 1882 is when the U.S. government formally excluded all Chinese citizens from entering the United States. So... I don't know when she got in, but she got in at the last bell, I guess.
Ooh, yeah, considering how old she was in the movie.
Well, she could have just, like, but she spoke good English.
Yeah, but what age did they import her in? That's
Either way, I'm saying. It's 5 years before they banned Chinese from entering the U.S., so. Yeah. There were Chinese in the Wild West for a little bit.
I thought Murphy stole her from her family because they wrecked one of her shirts.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I didn't follow everything, that's for sure. But you know what? Tell you what, we've been talking about Murphy a lot. I think
have
we need to throw it over to... We have, yeah.
I don't know any of these characters' names.
Murphy,
I have
Jack
to admit.
Palance, he's the bad guy.
I know
he's...
Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
And that's probably why you brought me on for this one, right? Because Billy the Kid's in Bill and Ted.
Yeah, but, but we're talking about LG Murphy, and that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner!
Ah, that's what you were aggressively trying to push towards. You looked so annoyed when I interrupted for a second there. You're like, fucking let me get to this thing. God, please.
Well, because I had to make it up for Scorpion King last week, and the week before that with Ghost. I had trouble segueing in. Colin had to get me in there. So, you know, I gotta push while I can.
Please shut
this
up.
This is a lot of, yeah, very euphemistic language going on. Always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Young Guns is brought to you by the Wortley Hotel, the weekly New Mexican newspaper, and LG Murphy and Company, the place to get all your dry goods, sundries, and mercantile. And all three of those legitimate businesses.
Okay, I was going to ask.
And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Are they legitimate businesses that are still around?
Oh, probably not.
Okay, I
mean,
I was going to say.
Maybe the newspaper, but no, I...
Yeah.
Well, see, the Wortley Hotel still exists. I did look that one up. Yeah, the Wortley Hotel still exists, but I don't think it's like open as a hotel. Mm. I think it's somewhere you can visit as a heritage site.
It's a fort ed. You can't spend a night there, though.
Yeah. So, another good line that I really liked was, he's killed more people than smallpox.
That's the one I wrote down. Yeah, he's killed more people than smallpox. That was my favorite one. That made me... Yeah. Laugh very hard.
Which is followed up with Let's Dance. I mean, that, you know, I made fun of it a little bit earlier, but that's a good start to a shootout right there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's Dance.
It seems classic. It seems like that's how a couple Wild West shootouts start. Let's Dance. Yeah. Or I guess I'm confusing probably the dance and shooting at their feet thing.
Oh, yeah, it's Dance Boy Dance.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Either way, it seems classic.
I felt like they could have done more with the bounty hunters. Like, that should have made up more of the movie of them just going against these bounty hunters and different people.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I don't remember what that guy's name is, but I'll just call him the Let's Dance guy. He's good.
That was Henry Hill, I think. Wasn't that one Henry Hill? Yeah.
Again, I don't know anybody's name.
Yeah, the only other one I recognize is Pat Garrett, who was played by John Wayne's son, Pat Wayne. But yeah, that's the only other name from the Old West I recognize outside of Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
You know what was actually kind of fucked up is when I used to watch this movie when I was younger and Pat Garrett would come around and there's that scene right before they go to the house. Billy asks Pat if he's his friend and he says yes. Like, I know the story about what's going to happen and that Pat is going to end up being the one who kills him. But in the movie, I always felt like, oh no, it was like one of those stories where they were friends and it's like Obi-Wan Anakin situation is about to happen later and they're gonna... But I realized watching it this time that Pat fucked him. Like, he wasn't his friend at all. Like, he set that up. He set him up to go to the house.
Didn't shoot him in the back. He was his friend in that moment. Maybe.
Yeah, that makes up for it.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Like, he totally Judas'd him, you know? Like... Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because there's that's when they get to the house where Alex kind of says, you know, are you sure that they didn't just try to get us all in one place or something like that?
Yeah.
That was where I was kind of like, oh, I think Pat Garrett knew what he was doing. Whereas I'd lived my entire 35 years thinking that, you know, in that moment he had his best interests in mind.
Yeah. For now. But yeah, I guess, I did go and watch Young Guns 2. So, I mean, if you need a copy of Young Guns 2, I got it on DVD over here if you wanted to borrow it. Nice. But I had to turn it on. I wasn't paying very close attention to it because I was doing other things, but, you know, I got the gist of it. So, but that's where they, like, it's William Peterson from CSI. He's the one that's Pat Garrett for that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember them being different guys.
Yeah, and it's like, when did Charlie Sheen turn into Christian Slater? Oh, wait. It's just a different movie. I always forgot that Charlie Sheen was in this movie.
Me too.
Yeah. Like, that. I mean, I guess maybe because he dies, gets slaughtered so early in the movie, but... Or I didn't remember him being part of this movie. Hmm. So...
I'm just looking. I forgot that there's that part of I was just looking at clips of Young Guns 2, and I totally forgot that there's a conceit in that movie about like super old Billy the Kid kind of retelling the story.
Which was one of the other things where it's like when it started off with them in that weird sepia tone, grainy footage and doing smiles for the camera, the sitcom opening, I'm like, where's the old man? Isn't this where I thought he was really old or something. But yeah.
I just thought, who are they shooting at? Just standing in a line, shooting at people. Doesn't seem to be a.
They got a fence post over there with like cans lined up.
Oh,
A
yeah.
bunch of knives and buckets or whatever.
Yeah, that's just yeah, that's just their
Yeah, that's
target
true.
practice.
But back to Chris's point, why is Chavez shooting? He should just be chucking knives.
Yeah, chucking knives left and right. He is knife guy after all.
You have to admit, the final battle in the house, I still think it's an ingenious move to have him be thrown out the window in that case. And
Dude.
I was surprised at how many bullets they all take and still survive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know I was sitting there as they were throwing shit out, and I was actually trying to wrap my mind around it because I forgot about the twist, I guess you'd call it. But I'm just like,
is.
why are they throwing shit out? Like, is that just because it's like more kindling? Like they're trying to get.
That's what I initially
That's what
thought.
I thought. And so, you know, no one on the ground thought anything of it. And I was actually legitimately wondering that. And I then when he pops out in slow motion, yeah.
Thank God it landed upright.
Well, that
That would have been like that episode of The
Yeah.
Office when Dwight's in the cardboard box.
But
Did they set that up at all, or is it just a twist? Is it just he
well,
popped out of that
yeah,
shit?
that's what I'm wondering. Like,
Because I don't
it's like,
remember a
was that all
setup.
part of the plan? No, I don't think. I think that's
Like, I don't
everything.
remember a shot of him getting into the
No,
chest, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
yeah, no. There was no them sitting around conspiring about what the master plan. There was no Kevin McAllister blueprints rolled out on the table or anything.
The thing that also doesn't make sense, I don't know if anybody's done a how it should have ended of Young Guns, but seemingly nobody observed Chavez leave the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
There's a
so
side door or something.
he's not any more in like from look anyways. He's probably the tallest guy there. Like he's not any more nimble than any of the other guys. I
He's
feel like
Native American.
they
He
could have
knows
all
the land.
yeah. They could have all followed him out.
He just burrowed like Bugs Bunny, you know? Is this the way to Albuquerque?
He knows the land. And then he turned around and snap zoomed to that tear falling down his cheek, like that ad, or seeing that anti-littering ad with the Italian dude in it.
Some Italian guy.
Is Lou Diamond Phillips actually Native American?
Yes, because I thought he was the guy in that ad immediately. I was like, that name seems familiar, but his mother is Filipino and his father is
Scots-Irish
Scott-Irish and
slash
Cherokee.
Cherokee.
Yeah.
So he's one quarter.
He's a quarter.
He's a quarter native.
He's a little bit more native than me.
But like the Scots-Irish is such a funny combination with Cherokee, I think. But meanwhile, he has played people like Richie Valens, you know, when it came to whatchamacallit? What's the movie called?
I don't
La
know.
Bamba. La Bamba.
Oh.
He won an Oscar for playing Richie Valens in La Bamba.
Yes.
Yes.
I did see it on his. La Bamba seems familiar. I saw it on someone's IMDb, so it
Well,
must have been
I
his.
and I did read that like the cast would go out together, get drunk, and when they were drunk enough, they would start asking him to sing La Bamba for them because he had just done that movie.
Nice.
I think my Lou Diamond Phillips knowledge actually just tops out at Young Guns.
Mine tops out at La Bamba. So there we go. I mean, I know his two things. I think he's been in other things. Oh,
Yeah, I'm
there's
just
a movie that I made Chris watch once called The Big Hit. He's in that. And it's this Mark Wahlberg, Christina Applegate, Lou Diamond Phillips. And I'm like, this is a great movie, Chris. Sit down and watch it. And then when we were done, you went, what the hell was that? That was your reaction to it. So I'm like, okay, well.
I can't remember what that movie
was
about.
He kept trying to return the video to the video store. He kidnaps the woman and holds her ransom in the house. You watched it, don't worry. But yeah, Lou Diamond Phillips is in that as well. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Maybe Stand and Deliver or one of those kind of movies. I don't know. Anyway.
He's in something.
Well, yeah, I should have done more Lou Diamond Phillips research since it's like our 75th episode. And he was my segue in was the fact that it's Lou Diamond Phillips.
you failed him.
I failed
the diamond.
The diamond.
I'm sorry to the whole Diamond Phillips family.
You think Diamond Phillips is his real name?
No,
yeah, are they the Diamond Phillipses?
No, I don't even mean that. I mean, like, do you think that's a real name? You don't think that's a stage name?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Diamond Phillips. I mean, especially if his dad is Scots-Irish Cherokee. I mean, Phillips maybe, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I don't know. Diamond might come from, it might be a Cherokee family tradition.
Nah.
No?
His parents were potheads.
And can you substantiate that?
They were on the reefer, man. Okay?
Okay.
It was the 70s.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Probably older than that.
It was the 60s.
No, something like that.
If it was the 50s, they probably weren't smoking. Man. Allegedly. Let's quickly say that so I don't suffer any legal consequences. Allegedly, and Lou Diamond Phillips' parents were on the reefer.
And cue the more you know.
You know what? Diamond is actually his real middle name.
Oh, okay.
But his real last name was Upchurch.
Upchurch.
Church.
Yeah.
You know, like Updog?
Like, yeah. Like spelt exactly as it sounds, Upchurch?
Yeah.
Huh. I don't think I've ever encountered that name ever before in my life.
You know how typically, like, Western last names are, like based on professions or whatever? Paper, profession do you think Upchurch is based on? What can that possibly be?
I'm just wondering whether you're trying to get a...
Oh, a joke off? No.
Okay.
That is a good lead up to a joke if I had a punchline.
There's a child molesting Catholic priest in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, I just zoned out and came back into this conversation at the wrong time.
In my nightmares, at least there is.
So Young Guns.
Young Guns.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got anything else to say about Young Guns, but what about you? Oh, Chris has cards here, pages and pages of notes.
I wrote with a Sharpie like a dipshit.
I mean,
so I've got pages of notes, but, that's for sure.
But I know I've got a lot of editing of page flips to go out because he's also to edit out because he's also been like compulsively flipping back and forth between.
I've been doing it far away from the mic. It's just I've been trying to figure out what I want to. Say
hey,
when I want to say
these
it.
These are quality mics. I mean, they're picking that up. Gotta be careful. Okay, so what else you got there?
So much tobacco. That guy ate so much tobacco. I've written that so many times. Just tobacco guy. Oh my god, tobacco. So much tobacco.
Colin, anything else?
well, that's not just it. One other thing I wanted to point out really quickly was... God, shooting a Western would be so much fun. Just the history nerd in me is just like all these old locations that they shoot in. The fact that they're like in the desert and in the background you can see like snowy mountains. Like it's beautiful and it would be so much fun. I imagine it's kind of difficult and that they're probably like driving long hours to actually get to where they're doing their shoots and stuff. But beyond that, I feel like hanging out with your bros in the mountains.
Well, and they had to do a lot of learning how to ride horses.
Exactly. It'd
like
just
that.
Be
I
a
mean,
fun bonding experience.
Playing with guns. I mean, come on. Colin and I did a stage production of Oklahoma together. I mean, we had fake guns backstage all over the place. And we were ridiculous with them. So I can't imagine something that looks more real like what they were wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, I talked about it before Here's a question to throw your way. Before we started recording, you did say that, oh, I remembered more, or was this during the recording? Anyway, you said, oh, I remember more about the Old West than I thought I did before watching this. And so was there anything that you recall from your days of your history classes where you do want to say that, yes, I remember this from the history books?
Again, I did read a couple books about the frontier and stuff like that. Yeah. They were mainly Canadian books. I did read a couple on America. Like, I took an American history class, so okay. I do know a thing or two about a thing or two. But I didn't write any specific facts down beyond the fact they mentioned scalping a few times in the film. Mm-hmm. And while the Native Americans did practice scalping, it was only a few tribes, and it was mainly the northeastern United States. One thing that's constantly, and again, I am not an expert on this, but I feel like I do know a thing or two about a thing or two. But one of the things that's constantly, what's the word, gotten wrong, there's probably a smarter word for it, but one of the things that's constantly gotten wrong about Native American warfare especially, is that they were mainly trying to capture you so that they could humiliate you, deform you, and use you as a slave. One of the main reasons, like, the Aztecs, for example, fell is because they were trying to, like, capture Europeans while they were being shot at. They were trying to kidnap them and stuff. Hmm. Like, Native American warfare was a lot about trying to kidnap more of the other team than your team. Of course, they did brutal things, killed each other, blah, 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 blah. But that is one thing constantly gotten wrong. They were not just out there to kill you and take your scalp kind of thing.
Okay.
That being said, in the 1870s, if I were a Native American, I would probably be looking to kill every white person I saw, because they'd been through some shit at that point.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
How long were they with the natives in the camp before Charlie gets married?
Did they go to a...
Were they in Mexico?
I thought they were. I thought they were in Mexico there.
Oh, okay. Sorry. See, yeah. I thought that was a smooth segue. Well, because they rode through the village and the, you know.
I just immediately tried to picture them in, like, the middle of, like, a native reservation or something like that, and I couldn't. Did they?
Okay. No. Okay. So in Mexico.
Yeah. Okay.
How long were they there before?
Well,
got married.
It says at the very end that Billy the Kid never left New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps the entire movie they were in New Mexico?
No, but they were in Old Mexico at that point.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
God, I didn't watch this movie.
Well, okay, well, they've got the one, you know, moment where they're hanging out, getting to know each other
right.
at, like, a, you know, town party or whatever.
At the very beginning, yeah.
And then, no.
Well,
they might not. Like, they couldn't have been in Old Mexico because they get word. They wouldn't have been. Well, I mean, I don't know how long of a ride it is or what timelines we're working here. But they immediately go from there back to Lincoln. So they would have had to have still been close. And there's at one point, like Doc says, they just keep circling.
Maybe I made a mistake by watching the second movie.
Yeah, in the second movie,
yeah,
they
get to Mexico.
Yeah, because I was going to say, there were a lot of white people in that movie for it to be Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of men, I mean.
The other thing I wanted to point out is, I don't think I saw a single African American in the film.
Yeah, you did, the cavalry.
Oh, right, at the very end. Because I was going to say, yeah, they were free at this point. Not totally free, especially in parts of the South, but. They were free men, and most of them went north or went west.
Yeah,
so you'd expect to see a couple, at least.
I don't know. New Mexico, Texas.
The other thing about cowboys that's constantly gotten wrong throughout history is that a lot of cowboys were African American. It's actually a big forgotten part of, like, African American history, is that there was a large cowboy culture, especially in, like, the... what is it? The western south, I guess. The southwest of the United States. So, New Mexico, Arizona area.
Huh.
Yeah, Texas.
Okay, well.
Yeah. That's the... another history fact. Boom.
The more you know. They were in the cavalry, so, I mean, they
well, yeah, because they were part of, like, the Union soldiers or whatever,
yes,
right?
At least we weren't totally excluding people from this movie. There was some diversity. Just, yeah.
I guess I didn't notice it at the very end because I just went into it going, there aren't any African Americans in this movie. What's going on? Because I expected to see at least a couple. Because it's the Wild West, you expect to see one or two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, back to my question, though. How long from the time that Charlie met this girl till the time he was married? Because it feels in the movie like a night.
It was just like a day.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because to me, it seemingly all happens while Billy's in the bath.
Yeah, I guess so. It kind of does. Yeah.
It's kind of believable. I mean, marriage back then was just kind of asked her dad if he was okay with it. Didn't really have to get her word on it.
Well, okay, with that bathtub scene, do you think you'd be pissed off if you were Doc and you had to write out all that letter and then he's like, P.S., you can kiss my ass? Because he finds it hilarious.
Yeah.
But do you think you would? And it's like, fuck. Like, now I'm your secretary hanging out with you in the bathtub? Like, fuck.
I mean, Doc, like, Doc is actually kind of a strange character when you think about it. He's just looking for a daddy, seemingly. Like, he goes from Tunstall, and then Tunstall gets killed, and he's just Dick's right-hand man, and then Dick gets killed, and then he's just like, well, I guess I'll just follow Bill. But he's the oldest, is he not? Yeah. Like, isn't Doc meant to be the oldest one? He should be taking up some leadership.
Well, yeah, you said in the true story, right, that he was 31 compared to the rest
of
them?
True story, yeah.
Yeah.
But all of them were older than Tunstall,
mm-hmm.
by the sounds of it. But it was, yeah, Doc. Doc was used as an example.
Wait, then Tunstall, the guy, the British guy that took them in? Really?
Yeah.
Huh. That'd be so weird. Can you imagine just somebody younger than you, like, I love lost souls coming to my house.
I have to admit, I wasn't fully understanding what was going on with this weird boy's house that he had going on. Like,
well, yeah, when the guy first like made the are you gay implication, I was like, I mean, it's a little odd. I wouldn't go that far, but yeah, it's weird that you're just bringing in a bunch of lost boys to take care of. Like, what's your motive other than cheap labor, I guess?
Fucking Peter Pan.
I wasn't expecting where the movie would go, and I'm glad that it was like this weird revenge movie. That was fun.
Yeah.
So I will say that, but yeah, the whole living situation was kind of odd at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And learning to read together, grown adult. Again, though, it's 1878, of course. Like, not everybody knows how to read. You might go to a place, especially if you're a runaway.
Like you said, that it was modern times. You're going to need your brains as much as your gun.
Which is totally true.
Yeah.
Well,
there we go. That is Young Guns. Oh, now Colin, Chris, on IMDb, it scored a 6.9 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 50. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 41% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 76%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like so many squibs exploding on our chests. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. I have one for Chris, okay. the history buff,
sure,
over
let's
here.
Hear it.
It's from a reviewer named Native Cowboy. He gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "Great movie. My only issue is the timeline. Billy the Kid wasn't born until 1881, 3 years after what happened allegedly took place. So the timeline is at least 10 years off, if not 15."
It says in the synopsis for the movie that it takes place in 1878.
Yeah, yeah. No, and he's saying that...
Didn't he just say it was 1881?
No, Billy the Kid was born in
1881. Oh, I thought... Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know when Billy the Kid was born, man. Yeah. I did know he was a real dude, but he is, like, mythological, like Jesus.
Yeah.
Like Jesus, not to compare him to Jesus.
Okay.
But well, Jesus was a real dude, but like not obviously, not to. You guys already chose to go after the Catholic Church this episode.
You know,
I don't want to really.
No, just, you know, keep talking. It's just going to hit the cutting room floor anyway. So
Jesus,
you know,
was obviously
we're good.
I don't
know
if he walked on water.
All right, next review is from Tommy Murdoch, who says 5 out of 5 stars. I think Young Guns is great because I like when Billy the Kid shot that person in the outhouse, and I like cowboy movies and cattleman revolvers.
Didn't they not shoot the dude in the outhouse?
Well, they were shooting at the dude.
They shot at the dude, but they ran away like bitches.
Yeah, but they plugged that outhouse full of a lot of shots.
Who fuck? That doesn't mean he died.
You're focusing on the wrong part.
Okay.
Yeah. They thought it was cool.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Let's see. This is a pretty accurate review from Peter Travers with People Magazine. It's he says he didn't give it a ripe tomato score. He gave it a splat.
Oh, okay.
And he says the boys shoot, ride, flirt, get high on peyote, and revel in enough self-adoring, anachronistic. That's the word I was looking for. Anachronistic behavior to have all but hold on. The boys shoot, ride, flirt, get high on peyote, and revel in enough self-adoring, anachronistic behavior to have all but inveterate teeny boppers swearing vengeance on the film's makers.
That guy sent his review through some like thesaurus app.
Jonathan D gives the movie 2.5 out of 5 stars and says,
"Fuck you, this Jonathan D."
This movie is all caps, not good. I liked it when I saw it back in 1988. I was 11. The story is bad, and it is anchored by one of the worst musical scores of all time. It's an over-the-top electronic rock sound. It really ruins some of the scenes. The acting by Emilio Estevez and the rest of these young guns is pretty good and saves the movie from being a total disaster. It has some classic lines like, "Regulators, mount up!" I give it 2.5 stars primarily for nostalgic purposes.
Autobots, roll out!
Dude, one other thing that we did not call enough attention to was that one monologue that Lou Diamond Phillips gives is incredible.
That is
good. Oh, right, it's very good.
Yeah. I was taking that, I was so silly up until then, and then all of a sudden I went, okay, I have to actually put everything down and pay attention to this bit. He's really yelling.
That is true, yeah. I gave props to a few guys right at the top, and yeah, we need to take a quick detour here and say, yes, Lou Diamond Phillips, you see why he won that Oscar for La Bamba. I
mean, are you talking about, like, the sad monologue?
Yeah. The one about his slaughtered family and shit.
His mom being cut from genital to neck or whatever he said.
Yeah.
Yeah, just horrible.
I was born of the darkness.
My favorite Chavez is when he's talking to Dirty Steve and he's like, many a night I held a knife at your throat and caught him. And he's like, I'm so glad I didn't cut your throat.
Me too, man. Me too.
Okay, last review is from Isaac M, who gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, Young Guns is not like any Western movie I've ever seen. In fact, Young Guns is unique in every way. The acting, the editing, the music, and the production is pure and realistic. I do have some problems with the historical accuracy, but that doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy the movie. I really like this movie. I really do. Overall, Young Guns really shows the Old West with legendary gunslingers like Billy the Kid.
Yeah, I definitely like this movie.
I will say they hit the nail on the head there. It is very unique. Unique is the word for it. There is not any other... Name another Western like Young Gun. It's very unique. Yeah. I'll give it to them.
A Million Ways to Die in the West. I did read that there was an extended version of the scene when they go to get Charlie the prostitute.
Ah, the Christopher Kane cut. That was his name?
Yeah.
Okay.
But apparently it turns out that he only wants to hug her because she's actually his mother.
Oh.
Yeah.
What? I was gonna say, I feel like I've seen that scene before where he's just like, actually, I was hoping I could just hold you for a little bit. Is that a cliche, or is that in another movie, or am I thinking about this movie?
I don't know. Out of all the movies that I watch that are about people visiting whorehouses, I can't say that's come up too often.
I swear to God, but that's the reason it stands out, though, right?
Yeah.
I swear so. It's come up more than once that it's just like, actually, I was hoping we could just cuddle instead of bang each other's brains out.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think they even do it in Pretty Woman. So anyway, we got 50% and 41% as our critic ratings, 6.9 and 76% as our audience ratings. I will say that I was curious, and I did go and look up the ratings for Young Guns 2. I didn't write them down, but they were all lower in every category.
And you guys have been saying this whole time you like Young Guns 2 more.
And I like Young Guns 2 more. Let's throw it over to Chris first. Chris, it's your first time seeing Young Guns. What did you think of our Young Guns?
The whole time I watched the movie, it was incredibly... I said this at the very beginning. It was incredibly jarring from the music... to seeing Chancellor Valorum at the beginning, to seeing the guy from Lost pop in every now and again. Mm-hmm. Just so jarring, and every time Charlie Sheen said a line, I went, oh shit, that's Charlie Sheen.
He's got tiger blood.
He's winning, dude. Except for that one part where he didn't know how to dance.
Yeah.
But with that said, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. You said at one point, or Colin says, every time we talk about a movie to pause and go watch that movie. I really hope you did. It's definitely worth a watch at the very least. It's unique. It's great. I was saying to Mia the entire time, my girlfriend, refer to earlier in the podcast, that I definitely need to sit down and watch this movie again. And yeah. The fact that there's a second one, I definitely should give the second one a go too. So,
well, yeah,
I enjoyed it maybe 75 out of 100.
Okay, yeah, I mean, when I popped in the sequel last night, it's they don't try to be as artistic with it, and that makes for a bit of a better movie. And I mean, they close with Bon Jovi, so I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
Bon Jovi's kind of a shithead, though.
Okay,
sorry.
Allegedly.
Not allegedly. No, he's fuck. Totally Chris, a shithead.
Stop doing this to us, Colin. What did you think of Young Guns on this viewing?
I think I, to be honest, picked up more on what the actual story of this movie was than I ever had before.
Yeah, for sure. I feel that.
So, I don't know. I think I still really loved it. It's still, mm-hmm. You know, it's a movie that I think is highly rewatchable, especially for a Western. Still probably one of my favorite Western movies, for sure. So, I mean... I don't really have. I honestly don't really have anything bad to say about it. I didn't notice. I pretty much didn't notice any of the critiques that you guys brought up off the hop. Okay. I was just kind of taken aback. I think for me, the thing that I was taken aback most by that I mentioned was the fact that I have made up more about what happens in this movie than actually happened. So watching it for me was just a bit of. It was jarring in that way where I just kept feeling like I thought there was more. I thought there was more to what's going on here.
Do you think some of that is sequel confusion for you, though?
Some of it might be. I know I'll probably figure that out when I watch the sequel again. But yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I definitely think I would highly recommend Young Guns to anybody who, you know, wants a fun movie to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the first... couple things out of the gate in this podcast were me talking about the cinematography and the music, and that's kind of one of the things that I took away most on this viewing was, like you said, I had a better idea of everything that was actually going on, but it was also that the cinematography has been making some odd choices in this movie, and what is up with that fucking score? Like, those were two of my big takeaways. And I had trouble getting past that to an extent. I mean, I will say it took me out of it quite a bit. But you had the one review, though, where it was like saying that, you know, this movie is one that's kind of, as a genre, it kind of stands on its own. Or at least that's how I want to interpret that. And that's a little bit of how I feel is it is... Young Guns. It's a hip Western in 1988. In 2022, it's not necessarily a hip Western, but it is a fun nostalgia trip, and I'm glad that I revisited it because it did make me want to go and watch the sequel, which I did. But it was, I walk away saying that I think the sequel was definitely my preferred of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the score was the oddest choice I've ever seen. The cinematography was interesting to say the least, but I'm not pretentious. I highly enjoyed the film.
Yeah, if you don't mind accents all over the place and a little bit of Charlie Sheen, you know, like, yeah, it's still a fun time. If you haven't seen Young Guns and you've made it this far, then, like, what the hell is wrong with you? But if you haven't seen Young Guns, you should see Young Guns.
I have one last, like, fun fact that I thought, I don't know why, but it just struck me as interesting that Young Guns is the very first movie ever produced by Morgan Creek Productions.
Oh.
Interesting. They went on to make, like, the, I don't know, lots of things. Everybody would recognize their symbol, but I think they made, like, Ace Ventura and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves,
Yeah.
Right on. I was going to attribute that to maybe, like, the bad cinematography. maybe the producers were just like, we really need to do something special on this one. So they just threw a bunch of stuff at the board.
Well, there we go. That is Young Guns, and that's our show for the week. A big, huge thank you to my son, Chris Wells, for joining us once again. What is the show number 5 for you? 6? 7? 9?
69.
69. Oh, terrible.
Nice. one more thing before you let me go.
Yeah, because you always do.
I love to. You
make me bust out the extended credit music.
The end shootout is just, it's so good, and I just, it's guys being dudes. Just guys being dudes.
Just guys being dudes.
Just men being bros.
Right on. Right on. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, tell your friends, share our posts. Word of mouth is everything for a podcast that needs help finding an audience. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say, give us a little review. But 5 stars just helps drive us up the charts, helps us get noticed. I don't know why. Algorithms, science, computers, microchips, the internet, things like that. I don't understand it. Or if you want to go above and beyond and help us out financially, you can go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become an executive producer where you can get a shout out on the show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes as well as our social media. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.